Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast. My name is Scott McKenzie, and once again, we are broadcasting from the IoT Solutions World Congress here in beautiful Barcelona, where food is magnificent. They have some drinks, too, which are pretty fun, too, as well. And it's brought to you by those wonderful people at Industrial Internet Consortium. That's Industrial Internet Consortium. Go out to iiconsortium.org. And you're saying to yourself, Scott, why would I want to go out there? You need to go out there because they know everything about IoT, IoT, AI, security, and they're leading the way. And you know what? You're going to say, well, Scott, how much is it going to cost me? And I'm going to say, it's free. Because they're dedicated to you and your success in solving your problems. That's iiconsortium.org. Go out because they're wonderful people. And we've got a great interview this time around. And we're talking blockchain. Talking blockchain and the application of blockchain in the supply world. And we're talking to Mohan. And he's got a lengthy last name, so I'm going to let him sort of tell you what his last name is. Because I'm going to butcher it right there, Mohan.
No, not at all. It's pretty easy. It's Mohan Venkatraman, if you drop that single A in between.
I like it, man. But anyway, you're with Chainyard, and you're the CTO, baby, Consulting and Advisory Services, man. That's a lengthy title, but it's all good. Yes. Chainyard, that's a great name.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so I don't call myself the CTO. In fact, I consider myself as the first principal consultant of this practice.
Except it's not on your business card, so I'm just reading your business card, and it says CTO.
That's the way my company wants to project me out. But I can tell you the reason why is, I come with about 35 years of IT experience. And so back in 2016, when my founder, Sai Nidhamarthy, said we have to start a practice in blockchain because IBM really wants us to help test their product, which is being worked in stealth at that time, called Open Blockchain, we stepped up, and then we had like 14 blockchain engineers actually test IBM Open Blockchain, which later on became christened as IBM Fabric, and then got open sourced called Hyperledger Fabric under the Linux Foundation. So we've been testing blockchain since 2016, and it led us to build a practice around that. So we started to do solutions around blockchain, especially enterprise permission blockchain. Basically, most blockchains like Ethereum and Bitcoin are public blockchains. Anyone can join the network.
So you have a private platform.
Not exactly.
Okay.
The Hyperledger platform, Hyperledger project under the Linux Foundation sponsors and nurtures permission blockchain technology, which means the members of the blockchain network have to be given certain cryptographic credentials in order to participate in the blockchain network, and they have to be permissioned under the network, so not anyone from the public can just join the network and start transacting.
Right.
So permission blockchains came in simply because public blockchains could not support enterprises, like enterprise applications such as supply chain, logistics, or procurement. And so permission blockchains came in to support businesses so that they can create business networks and start transacting.
Okay, for this simpleton over here on this mic. So the way I understand, and this is the way let's say we talk about supply chain. I've got a warehouse, and in that warehouse is a material. And the way I would probably, order material is I would contact the supplier via phone and say, send me over something. And then they would fax over something or send it via email, and I would confirm that I'm going to buy, 100 bolts.
Right.
That's the way I understand it. Tell me where the blockchain solution fits into that.
So before we see how the solution works, so the real issue in the business world is about trust, and blockchain is all about trust, transparency, privacy in a trustless environment. So business partners do not trust each other. That's why you have all this documentation and the confirmations, the legal signatures, etc. So what blockchain allows you to do is to build trust. It's an immutable record of the transactions. So which means if you write once, it cannot be modified. For example, suppose I owe someone, you, $100. But instead, I actually transacted 200. I cannot simply go and update that transaction right. from 200 to 100. I have to submit another transaction, which takes off 100 and deposits it back into my account. So blockchain is actually write once and it is there. It is immutable record. That's one. The second is blockchain is written, blockchain cryptographically provides security, meaning like transactions that come in chronological sequence go through a process of consensus, which means the members of the network participate in a consensus protocol to agree on the transaction before it gets recorded in, blockchain is really a database, ultimately.
Got it.
Before it gets recorded in the database. But then the interesting thing is that no one business partner can go and unilaterally modify any of the transaction simply because every member of that network has a copy of the same transaction, the same database. So what happens is if one of the partners goes and changes it, the remaining nodes on the blockchain network will detect the anomaly and force the anomalous node to correct itself.
So, wow.
So blockchain is, and the way it happens is like every time there are multiple nodes on the blockchain. A node is nothing but a computer, virtual or physical, that runs the blockchain software on top of which the application runs. It's called smart contracts.
Right.
Smart contracts run on the blockchain, and they are the ones that actually are allowed to write into the database.
So when we start talking about a private blockchain and members, the nodes that go through, to become a member of a private blockchain, that can be defined by the group.
Yes.
And that in that determination that, let's say, I want to be a part of it, I'd have to fulfill certain obligations to say, yeah, you're good. And that by virtue says, okay, I can be, to a certain extent, trusted to join that private blockchain. Is that correct?
That is true. So there is usually blockchains, the blockchain starts centralized and then they become decentralized over a period of time. But then the initial founding members later on put in the rules of engagement. You can say the bylaws
right.
for joining
right.
the blockchain
right.
network. And that goes as part of a governance model. So once the rules of engagement is put in place, it defines such aspects as who can join the network, what are the legal obligations and the business obligations to join the network, what is the subscription fee, do they want to operate a node or they just want to be a user on the blockchain. So these are all defined by the rules of engagement, which we call MOU or Memorandum of Understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. What is interesting, so now I'm trying to simplify it. So if I transact with you, let's say just the old way, I transact with you, you send me all the contract, we go back and forth, and we go back and forth, which takes time. And then I come to the determination that, yeah, I can do business, and we've signed, and we have a grand old time, but time has passed.
Yes.
Then I want to do business with you again, and then once again, we go through the same exercise of going back and forth, and then I have to sign time has passed. But what I hear you saying is if I'm part of a particular private network or private blockchain, I can just satisfy that obligation, and then I can truly speed up my transaction much faster.
Yes, so let's take an example and talk about it, right?
Yeah.
So in a traditional business sense, there is a buyer and a supplier. The buyer places an order on the supplier, and the supplier fulfills that order, and then there is an invoice process from the supplier to the buyer, and the buyer has to pay the amount on the invoice. Now, usually what happens is the buyer has an ERP system, the supplier has an ERP system.
Yep.
The contractual agreement between both of them is interpreted in different ways and stored in their respective systems.
Yep.
And when it actually comes to processing the transaction like an invoice, it can end up in disputes or it can go into what is called accounts receivable.
Yep.
It's a long tail.
Yep.
So imagine a blockchain that helps to transact business between buyers and suppliers. So the contract itself is actually signed off cryptographically on the blockchain through smart contracts. And then the smart contracts are the ones that allow, that validate the transaction, whether it is the invoice or whether it is the advance ship notice. And so the disputes, the chances of disputes are reduced considerably because both parties or all parties on the blockchain see the same version of the truth.
Yeah.
That's the fundamental benefit of using a blockchain in supply chain.
I was going to say, what pain are you solving? What problem are you solving in the traditional sense by virtue or pushing or encouraging people to go to a more blockchain type of solution? That to me is interesting.
So if we have taken, so let's continue the same invoice problem, right?
Yeah.
So first of all, there is contractual disputes, meaning the interpretation of the contract on both sides. Second is, there is always a shipment notice that goes to the buyer.
Yep.
And the possibility is that the shipment is received by the buyer from the supplier, but there could be a return on inspection or there could be any kind of other changes. But the supplier on the other side assumes that the shipment went through and starts to invoice the buyer. Now this can lead to a lot of disputes between whether the material was received or not and whether the invoice value is correct or wrong.
I'm not sure if that's ever happened.
So if you really put it on a blockchain, you have a single version of truth. So you are doing two things. One is improving the efficiency of the business process.
Yep.
You are also bringing in reducing the probability of disputes. And actually, in this process, there are rewards and incentives for all the parties that are involved in the blockchain.
What are those incentives?
So,
because I get the first two, that's ideal.
One of the incentives in some models we have seen is like the buyer might get the buyer gets his payment early. The supplier might offer a discount,
right,
in order to get the payments speeded up. That is one. They could also have participating in the blockchain itself, right? As more and more, the network effect starts to kick in, as more members join the network, the network effect starts to bring in more efficiency on the chain. So, in some cases, we have actually seen that rather than move money around, credits are offered in the form of tokens on the blockchain.
Oh.
And tokens can be held by these for other purposes. So there are like various other models that can be brought in as incentive models onto the...
That's pretty wild. Because that's...
Now, I can talk about maybe...
We're going to talk about this. And the reason... there are two things that I really wanted to try to... First off... Trust your supplier. That's real important. That's interesting to me. But the other one I want to talk about is, where do you see it going? I mean, where do you see this going? I mean, it's just an interesting...
So we have had several studies, right? Some studies say that blockchain, it's a long way off before blockchain adoption takes place. And then there are other studies where we have actually seen that blockchain is going to revolutionize. It's called the Internet of Transactions. But our experience has been, we've been working on three projects that have been going on for almost 3 years. And one of them is about asset track and trace of manufactured assets. And we really see that kind of a business problem. The asset provenance and the asset track and trace brings great benefits, and we see a lot of traction in that space. The second is the procurement space of contingent labor. Most companies hire contractors from different companies to work on their projects.
Yeah.
And oftentimes there is a dispute on the amount to be paid or the timesheets or the contractor's compliance obligations. We have been working on this problem with our partner IBM, implementing it for IBM. And one of the problems it solves is contractual timesheet disputes, invoice disputes, and bringing in more efficiency in the contracts.
And just so that you understand, I had an industrial maintenance company. The majority of my conversation, and I mean the majority, outside of safety, was timesheets.
Right.
Timesheets. And so I created a system. It wasn't a blockchain system, but you better sign off on it, and then you go over here and you have another person sign off on it and sign off on it so that it eliminates any disputes. You know what happened? There's still disputes.
So one thing we did when we implemented this particular solution is the blockchain is the source of truth for all timesheets.
Yeah.
If you want to consume a timesheet, if you want a timesheet entry back into your ERP systems or your own applications, you will consume it out of the blockchain. It will not come in as a data feed from external systems into the chain. So we enforced smart contracts to be the source of truth. And so any change to a timesheet actually happens on the blockchain, and any change to the timesheet itself is signed off by the parties that are involved, both the buyer and the supplier, to say, to acknowledge the change. So we have seen considerable improvements in efficiency.
That's huge.
Just because, by virtue of this.
It's huge. Let me ask you, before we go right into, and I want to be able to expand upon it because we have time, trust your supplier. But before, in the private blockchain and in the governance documents or whatever, your MOU, I would imagine that there are defined behavioral requirements and then behavioral issues that get you kicked out. You're going to get kicked out.
Yes. So I want to address two things. One is the governance itself. In the governance, we actually specify who can be a member, and then there are operational requirements for being a member, which means like what is the kind of system and security they have to be implementing, compliance requirements, what happens if there is a data breach, how do we respond, who owns the data on the blockchain. It's not the network operator, so the ownership guidelines.
Yes.
Then manipulation, business continuity has to be defined, disaster recovery, and there's a whole suite of other things like standards and compliance, meaning like what kind of a node should it be? You can't use your home computer as a node on the network.
Right.
And which clouds can they run on? For example...
See, that to me is very interesting.
So that is what we specify in the governance documents.
Yeah.
The second is, like, you asked me a question about blockchain and how it takes us. There are a number of companies that are actually doing blockchain projects, but the real success of a blockchain project is only if you have business participants joining the network. So most blockchain projects fail because technically they are able to solve it, but they're not able to build a consortium and bring business participants together.
So, isn't that interesting? I didn't think about that.
So one of the key aspects of any blockchain solution, whether it is the contingent labor problem we are solving or whether it's the asset track and trace, is the participation of all the businesses on the network in order to leverage the benefits of blockchain.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you do not have enough participation, then the cost of the operating the network may exceed the benefits that one might get.
Right.
And so many blockchain projects fail as a result. So we have seen that when you start a blockchain project, you should have at least one business participant actually working with the company that kicks off the project. Otherwise, there is a possibility of failure.
So let's, and I like that. Because you need participation, you need active participation to really benefit from, and you've got a product, is it a, if it's a product, trust your supplier. It is a supply chain blockchain solution. Is that right?
Yes.
And then, hey, you're just on the video. Good job. And let's talk a little bit about, because I would imagine because of your last comment about participants in that blockchain, you're building the supplier.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yes. So trust your supplier was an idea that we had in 2017. Essentially, if you see any business that wants to do business with a supplier has to go through an elongated process of onboarding the supplier. Usually the supplier completes a number of questionnaires relating to their businesses, their financial position, their board of directors, their diversity, their eco-friendliness, and a number of others, GDPR compliance. So this is done once for, let us say, buyer one. The same supplier has to repeat the whole process for buyer two and buyer three and buyer four.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing again and again. So, and most often, buyers are not able to leverage the supplier because of their own internal duration that it takes to onboard the supplier. They have to do verifications.
Oh, I'm getting the picture. They keep going.
So what happens is, you know, and then buyers are also not able to deliver to the marketplace. I've heard stories like, you know, we're not able to onboard the supplier, and therefore we're not able to deliver our product to the marketplace. So what does Trust Your Supplier do? Trust Your Supplier is a digital passport for suppliers. It is a digital self-sovereign identity for suppliers, which is associated with a list of credentials that they can present to any other buyer. So once they get a credential, as long as that credential is still valid, they can present it to any other party, buyer, that is interested in that credential. So Trust Your Supplier is about a buyer's network. Yes. Where buyers get a pool of validated suppliers whose credentials are verified,
yeah,
and the network keeps track of changes to the supplier's credentials so that it, yeah, eliminates this,
like,
headache
that
out of the buyers themselves.
I like that a lot. And so what you're doing, too, as well, is you're validating the suppliers. I'm a buyer. I don't have to onboard as a buyer. Let's say I can just go, right, there they are. They're all validated. And then my time to execution is reduced dramatically. All I have to do is like, I need bolts, and I'll go to this one because it's on my trusted supplier.
Right.
And the value of the suppliers,
right,
is the fact that you bring in buyers too. So you're,
right,
bringing them all together, and you're using the blockchain,
right,
backbone as a way of being able to,
right,
transact business.
Absolutely. So
right,
once the
there you go.
And in this, in Trust Your Supplier, the supplier owns their credentials, and the supplier owns their data.
Yeah. Yeah.
And since we are talking about self-sovereign identity, the supplier can share their credentials according to their choices, only those attributes that they wish to share with other buyers. So, it also gives them a digital passport that is that does not have any geographic boundaries.
Yeah.
And second is that it is immutable, so nobody can go and take it away from them. It is recorded on the blockchain. And
that's so interesting. Because, you know, there have been models out there that created that sort of that, here are the suppliers, here are the buyers, and we're going to bring them all together, and this is price visibility and price capillarity and all of that stuff. But blockchain has been sort of that integral.
But the thing is that Trust Your Supplier is a joint venture with us, with IBM.
Yeah.
And so IBM, Chainyard have launched Trust Your Supplier. And for us, the good news is that we have about 14 members on the board of governors,
yep,
which includes companies, big names like AB InBev, Nokia, Vodafone, and that's effectively Trust Your Supplier and network.
Got it.
And one of the key interesting concepts we use in this is called digital identity and self-sovereign identity and verifiable credentials as concepts that are actually implemented on this platform.
I hate to wrap it up, but I have to. But this is amazing. This is Mohan Venkataraman.
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you.
you
didn't butcher it at all.
he's with Chainyard. And we were talking a lot about leveraging the blockchain technology and be able to create an environment that definitely can transact from a supplier perspective and a buyer perspective. Great stuff. Are you out there on LinkedIn?
Yes, I am. And people can go and look for Mohan Venkataraman on LinkedIn and connect with me.
He is there, baby. And I'll have all this information out on industrialtalk.com and all his contact information as well. But you got to reach out to him. He knows what he's talking about. And then once again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk podcast. We are broadcasting live from IoT World Solutions World Congress, and it's brought to you by those wonderful people at Industrial Internet Consortium. If you have any interest whatsoever in IoT and any of the AI, blockchain, look at that, Mohan, got you in there. Go to iiconsortium.org, iiconsortium.org, find out more, and it's free, so you can't complain about it. So that's what we're all about. Thank you again. Be bold, be brave. And change the world. Thank you very much for joining. We will have another great conversation right around the corner.